Well, Kate, you wrote a cover story for The Atlantic that went viral and clearly resonated very strongly with thousands of readers. How's that conversation developed since the article?
Oh, that's a great question. It's been every minute of this process has been so fascinating for me, from reporting and writing the article to having it come out to the initial response and to how it's filtered down over the course of the last 12 months. And so the initial response was a lot of very angry hate mail from men. And I was getting death threats and really violent, scary emails.
Oh, you're
from
kidding.
Yeah, that was very surprising. And saying, you know, pretty much the tenor of those was like, who do you think you are? Why do you think you're too good for men? I'm good enough. You know, like, you know, really hurt men. So And so the ones that were violent scared me. The ones that were just angry really broke my heart a little bit to think that they had interpreted what I was saying that way. And so there were even occasions where I broke down and wrote back saying, you know, please just look at the article again and you'll see that I'm not, you know, doing away with your gender. I'm trying to think about new ways of thinking about relationships, too.
Did they write back forgivingly?
No. But it made me feel better to think that, you know, that someone was attacking me out of a sense of hurt. And I just wanted to kind of allay some of that if I could. And then very quickly, I just started hearing from hundreds. And then I don't have, you know, the numbers now, but it must be in the thousands at this point of people, or 1,000 or something, people saying, just being very excited about it and feeling like they saw themselves recognized in the article. And so that's really what it's been like over the course of the year. So it's been exciting that this conversation about being single or not being married, which is something that people have talked and written about forever. It's not that it's news, but it just came, this specific iteration of the conversation came at a specific point in time when people were very ready to hear it and really needing to hear it. And so that's been exciting to be part of.
Well, you were in some places in the article kind of tough on men today. There was one, I think you said, increasingly a marriage-minded woman's options are between deadbeats, whose numbers are rising, and playboys, whose power is growing. I mean, ouch.
Yeah. I actually regret that part. I think I was getting a little too rushing to deadline, journalistically bombastic. And it's not that there's not a grain. There's truth to that, but it's too reductive the way I wrote it.
Well, let's assume that it's a generalization, and you know the devil is in the details. But in general, I mean, who are the deadbeats and the playboys? I mean, something's changed in the quote-unquote marriage market.
Yeah, well, I'd say that, okay, to answer that, who are the playboys? The playboys are men who are high-earning, very successful, who don't see any reason to marry, who have a kind of endless pool of available women to enjoy time with, and who don't feel the pressures for marriage that others might, and they are able to enjoy this freedom without censure, I think. And so I find that, you know, here we are in this brave new modern world where anything goes, nothing matters, you can do whatever you want. But in fact, you know, the ideas of, you know, non-monogamy or polygamy or, you know, are still very outre. And that it's the people, it's the playboy figure is the one who seems to get off. The playboy figure is the one who seems best able to get away with having many simultaneous sexual relationships without being attacked for doing that or something. And there seem to be more of them. And just one more thing to say about that is that with the kind of hysteria around matrimony or the everyone's idea that you need to get married to, the way that that creates a gender divide that keeps women in a very anxious spot and then makes the men who feel outside of that, who feel that they don't have to get married, gives them excess power. Does that make sense? That they can enjoy their freedoms without anxiety.
It sounds like supply and demand.
Yes.
If there
yes.
are many more women than men, which is increasingly the case, at least on college campuses for sure, then the guys have all the choice in the world and the women have less choice. But aren't we sort of proceeding from the assumption that it's a very old-fashioned assumption that women want to get married and settle down and men want to play the field?
Well, not necessarily. I think that I am proceeding from the assumption that the majority of women want to marry and settle down, and that's because that's what I hear and see. It's not that it's a generalization that is unexamined. It's a kind of it's not even necessarily a desire that women have. It's a cultural dogma that women have to wrestle with in a way that men don't quite have to.
Really? You don't think young men think that, you know, if I'm not married by 40, there's something wrong with me?
I think that a lot of young men worry about that, but not to the extent that women do, and that the anxiety is much more acute among women, hence the legions of books and self-help guides, and that are all oriented to women. And is he into you? Why he's not into you? It gives all of this conversation around dating and mating is skewed toward advising the woman on how to trap this elusive man. And that's not to say that that's reflecting an accurate reality, but there is reality in that reflection. And again, it's not that men don't want to get married at all, but they don't feel the anxiety to the extent that women do. And it's an age thing also. I mean, I think that when men get closer to 40, they start to feel it, or around 35. That's what I've seen in my own personal life is men hit 35, decide that it's time to settle down. So they've been sort of anxiety-free up until this point, decide that it's time to get married and just marry the next woman they're dating, and it's done. And then, you know, and then when they get closer to 40, you know, maybe there's more anxiety or self-questioning there. Mm-hmm. Aside from this kind of playboy figure I'm talking about, and I've talked to a lot of men in their 40s who are very happily unmarried, never want to be, very happily enjoying their status as a kind of alpha male with women in many ports. And that's not, again, it's not to say that women aren't also doing that, but that is a kind of caricature in which it is easier for men.
Some of this is driven by simply changing demographics. Actually, a lot of it is driven by changing demographics, right? I mean, we briefly touched on college campuses. I have a daughter I've been taking around to look at colleges, and I've been astonished at it's running 60-40 female to male on most American college campuses now.
Yes, yes. And so that gets into the deadbeat part of the equation and the fact that men are suffering. We're in a very strange moment for men, and it's a very concerning, kind of alarming moment that they're not represented on college campuses. Men were hit hardest. I mean, they're not represented as much as women are in college campuses. They were hit harder by the recession. I think it's a lot more confusing for men to figure out how to be a man. There is that kind of retro idea that marriage civilizes men. And so, you know, if you kind of go with that line of thinking, this phenomenon of delayed marriage seems to be a lot more beneficial for women than it is for men. And I think that men can feel, in an individual way, can feel more lost about what it means to grow up or how to do it. And so then we get that Judd Apatow caricature of the video console pot-smoking schlub. And there is a lot of that. And I think it's not because men are jerks. It's because men are lost, and there's not a way of thinking about how to enter into adulthood that's very conducive right now.
You had you spent time sitting around and talking with young women, like young women who are either in college or recently graduated from college. What do they say?
Well, that's been so striking to me, is that college-age women across the board all say, oh, yes, I definitely want to get married. And I say, well, how old do you think you'll be when you get married? Oh, 27 is the number, which is even lower than back when I was saying, oh, sure, of course, I'll get married. I'll be 30 when I get married. And, you know, the reality is that women are getting married. That is actually the median age right now, I think, is 27 for marriage. But I'm very interested in trying to figure out the disconnect between that wish and reality. That so the wish for marriage by 27 or so is rampant and unquestioned and very strong. And that's not to say that it's a fine wish to have, but numbers show that most people aren't doing that by 27. You know.
So are you saying that there are all these young women, college-age girls, who are going on expecting that they're going to be able to get married by 27? And are you saying, you know, honey, the bad news is the guys aren't going to be there?
No. I'm saying that not even the bad news, the news is you will most likely get married, but probably not when you're 27. You'll probably do it in your early 30s, that the age keeps trending upward. And especially if you are pursuing, you know, postgraduate education, or if you go, or, you know, law school or med school or anything, And it's not because of a dearth of men. It's because your sense of drive and ambition is going to take you further than you can imagine it doing right now. So back when I was in college saying, oh, of course I'll get married by 30. First, I want to go to graduate school and start my career, and then I'll fall in love and do that. And what I didn't anticipate was, well, actually going to graduate school and starting my career was really exciting and really absorbing. And it's what I wanted to keep doing. That's what I was focusing on. I wasn't ready to settle down with a mate, and I did not anticipate that response to my own life. And so that's what I think is different, in that it's surprising to me that that kind of news hasn't yet caught on among the college age set. And can it, will it, or is that desire for family and mating so deeply ingrained, and that expectation so deeply ingrained and reiterated by Hollywood and television all over again, or reinforced by Hollywood and television, is it just there? And so your 20s are going to be a surprise no matter what.
Well, I mean, let's talk some about your own personal experience. I mean, you were deeply invested in career and graduate school and all until 30. And then was there a moment when you suddenly looked around and thought, okay, I'm ready to get married and settle down now?
Well, that happened for me last year at 39. But up until then, I kept thinking I would find someone and get married. It didn't occur to me that I wouldn't. I just thought that I would, right? I'd been in love before. I had had long-term relationships. It just seemed like a very organic thing to be doing at some point. And so it did surprise me in my early 30s that I hadn't done that yet, because I thought I would have done that by then. And then the big surprise was at 35, realizing, oh, I'm not unmarried because something's wrong with me, or because I'm making selfish decisions, or I'm immature and can't settle down, or because there are no men. I'm single at 35 because I haven't wanted to be married yet, and I've kept making that decision to not be married. I just have not had that desire. And once I...
So it wasn't that all the guys you were dating were jerks?
No, I was dating wonderful guys. And that made it more bewildering to me. Why wouldn't I want to marry that person? This would be a lovely person to be married to. But
did you have a bunch of guys who asked? And you kept saying, no, sorry.
No, I don't want to paint it like that. It's not like people were down on bended knee and I was tossing away engagement rings. But no, I was involved with several very commitment-minded men who it was clear that should we go in that direction, that's where we would be going together. And once it started going closer to that direction, I felt like, wait a minute. I don't want to go in that direction I'd with anybody right now. I don't know why.
And so it sounds like what you're saying is we grow up with this cultural idea that, you know, the married and happily ever after, or that happily ever after means getting married and settled down. And you just kind of had that as a construct in your head. But in fact, what your life and your real choices was telling you all along is that that really wasn't your dream.
Exactly.
So is it still not your dream, or do you want to get married?
Well, as I said last year, I had this kind of premonition moment. I was out at a restaurant with a guy I was dating at the time, and it was clear that this relationship was falling apart. It was a stupid relationship. And it was, you know, at the kind of last gasps of that, but we were out with some friends, and I can't believe I'm admitting this on in public, but I did have this kind of mystical moment where I thought, oh my gosh, I want to be married, and not to this person, But I'm ready for something. And what it meant, what that meant to me, or for what marriage has meant to me all along, is that it's an extreme commitment. And there it requires a lot of engagement and agency and generosity and being present to, and responsible to another human being in a way that I wasn't, I just didn't think I was capable of it yet. And it's also meant to me a kind of narrowing of my world. And I wasn't ready for my world to narrow. I loved being alone in the world and accumulating many experiences on my own time. And what I felt in this strange, mystical, premonitory moment was, I've had enough experiences now.
I've had enough fun.
Kind of. And I'm ready to slow down a little bit and reorient myself. I had been really investing a lot of time and energy in many friendships and different relationships, and I felt ready to kind of pull that energy back in and devote it to one person.
That's just such an interesting thing to hear you say. You're the woman who wrote a very famous article on essentially the virtues of being single, you know, sort of positing this new kind of world in which we would let go of happily ever after in terms of romantic partnerships, and we might be able to embrace a happily ever after in which you'd stay single forever.
Well, if you notice in the article, I never say that I'm actually against marriage, and I never say that I don't actually want to get married myself. What I am saying is that that construct had been leading me. Mm-hmm. And that my actual heart was bringing me in a different direction, and that it wasn't until I made that realization that, oh, wait a minute, I'm unmarried because I'm happy with my life the way it is. Oh, being single is a completely legitimate way to exist and for me, a very absorbing and interesting one. Once I made that realization, I was much happier inside of my life. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that that means I will be single forever. It meant that I am single now and very satisfied with it. And when I look back at the last 15, 20 years, I have been very satisfied with it. The only thing that was making me unhappy was the idea that I should be doing something else that I wasn't doing.
Right, right. The idea that somehow your life as it wasn't good enough.
Right. And so I fully expect that I'll marry at some point. And I don't know when it will happen. If it it could happen next year, it could happen in 10 years. But the shift in me internally to say, like, I'm ready for that should it happen was very interesting to me. Mm. I just had actually never felt that within me. But I don't feel a rush for it to happen. Mm.
And what are you finding amongst other women? Because you're doing a lot of research, a lot of talking to women of many different ages. Are you finding that most women are responding to the, you know, dearth of men as you are, maybe postponing marriage for a bit? Or are there, have you met many women who, in fact, are deciding to stay single, are happy with that state?
Yeah, I am meeting women who are deciding to stay single and are happy with that state. They tend to be they're not overwhelming numbers. They tend to be older. Usually if a woman is 40, I think, and unmarried, that's when she comes to this conclusion that, like, actually,
well, there's that famous factoid or whatever. What, after 40, a woman has as much chance of being hit by lightning as,
oh,
getting
God, that,
married?
That's that horrible Newsweek article, I
yes,
think,
I hope
the
that's
80s.
Not true.
It's not true. And in fact, I forget what the statistic is, but numbers show that most people get married eventually. Hmm. And I mean, just something to keep in mind. And that especially when people... The more educated you are, the more you push off marriage is another statistic, but you still get married. And then the older you are when you get married, the more likely it is that your marriage will not end in divorce. And so what I tend to find is that women in their 40s who respond to the article or who I'm talking to about it, who have never been married, are saying, yeah, I went through a phase where I wanted it and I thought I was going to have it and I was upset that I didn't. And then I turned some corner at some point where I realized that I was actually incredibly happy with my life and my work and the way that I'm living right now. And so that's been very exciting to see and talk to women who are really feeling that confidently. And I think, you know, another, if I've wanted anything to come out of this article conversation, it's that I've wanted there to be a more positive conversation around what it means to be single, and that single people aren't the lonely, pitiable souls that we have historically considered them to be. And I think it's very important for us to have a more enhanced understanding of what it means to be alone, because that is what strengthens us as individuals. And it also, the stronger we are as individuals, the better able we are to be a partner. So it's not, my message is not stay single forever, down with marriage. It's my message, if I have a message, is to, if you are single, live your life to its fullest. And there is so much potential in a life that's unfettered by another, and then enjoy that time while you have it. And odds are, statistics show, you probably will mate up at some point, but that doesn't have to be at a specific point in time. There's no preordained moment when you need to do this thing. And of course, the children question, that
right,
complicates
we're
it.
Sort of deliberately skirting yeah. that. One of the things I think. Well, one thing that I found really fascinating in your article, there's a little moment near the end when you're kind of beginning to sketch out, if more of us are going to stay single, more women in particular are going to stay single, then what might that look like? Maybe we need more different kinds of living arrangements, even different places to live. And you wound up in Amsterdam yeah. at this, I can't even describe it. It's almost like a secular convent, except that's not quite right either. Can
yeah. So it's called the Buitenhof, and it's in the center of Amsterdam, kind of set down below the city streets a little bit. It's like at sea level or below sea level or something. And it's a cloistered, it was originally a cloistered medieval community for nuns. And it eventually, I can't remember when it became a non-religious kind of space, but for... oh gosh, now I'm forgetting the facts on it, but it's for a very long time, it has been a place where only single women are allowed to live. And you have to be at least 30 in order to move in. So it's not a like singles and dating kind of party Melrose Place space. It's but it's not religious either. These aren't nuns. You you have to live alone. That's the other thing that's required. You can't have roommates here. And so it's women of all ages. It's a beautiful space, just this this circle of, you know, those narrow Dutch houses all ringed around a courtyard.
So they're individual houses? People get to live by themselves? It's not like a big dormitory?
No. It's little houses. But, they're all connected. You know, those Dutch houses all uh-huh. share walls and then apartments inside of the houses. And so you walk up these little stairs. So the woman I visited lived at the top of one of these buildings in this kind of garret-like, totally enchanting space with, tiny, but two floors. And the bottom floor was her small living room, desk, work area, and kitchen, and then up a tiny little flight of stairs to a very low gabled-ceilinged bedroom. She just had this narrow single bed underneath a skylight window. And, you know, out the window, just these beautiful views of the sky and the rooftops. And she had lived there for about 5 years. And she has a partner, a man, who lives in a house elsewhere in Amsterdam. And they just happily live in their separate spaces. And originally, when they first started dating each other, he would come over for sleepovers. But she got a lot of kind of static about that from the women in her building.
It was not just cool.
Yeah, not cool. So, no, they don't have sleepovers.
I have to say, I read that and I thought, okay, so I'm a married woman with two teenage children with what I think is a fairly common recurrent fantasy of leaving for mm-hmm. not forever, but just a month, 3 months. And I know a great many mothers who think this, and I imagine there are a lot of women listening who think, oh my God, that sounds amazing. Your own little house or apartment with all these other women nearby. That sounds like a dream.
Yeah, I know, doesn't it? Yeah, and in fact, the article is in development right now with CBS to become a television sitcom. And the idea of it is based on that exact fantasy that, so the writer took off from the fantasy of the Bygenhof. And it's so the story is set in an apartment building in Boston called the Stanhope. And it's the main Kate character is a 35-year-old successful woman who decides she doesn't want to have it all. She thought she wanted to have it all, quote unquote, the husband, the two kids, the granite countertops. And she realizes after her boyfriend proposes, I mean, remember, this is all fictional, that she doesn't want to marry him, and that, in fact, her childhood best friend, Holly, who lives across the hall from her in her apartment building, is a better partner for her than her boyfriend has been. That when she's feeling excited, it's Holly she wants to share the news with. When she's feeling down, that's Holly is who she wants to talk with. Every night after work, they both come home and order takeout and sit in the hallway and eat and talk about their days. And they share a dog who wanders back and forth between the two apartments. And they've befriended a lot of other single people in the building. So there's a 70-year-old widow who is thriving and writing a blog and has a book deal. And then there's a 22-year-old college graduate who is desperate to get married and thinks that Kate and Holly are cautionary tales, and a divorcee and a kind of man-child. And so it's the show is, you know, looking at what it means to be single at all different ages and vantage points, and what is a life when you are considering singleness as a destination, not a journey, and that how do you create meaning in your life when it's not about looking for a family and finding that specific fantasy?
And do you think that is there a process of mourning? Do you think that people have to go through in order to let go of that happily ever after married fantasy?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. I think yes. I think I did.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, I write about it in the article, and it's true that when I was 35, I was breaking up with yet another boyfriend. It had been a year we'd been together. I had felt very seriously committed to it, but had come to realize that we really weren't suited for one another, and that my drive to be doing what I thought I should be doing was keeping me in that relationship more than anything else. And once I'd realized that we had to break up, I went to sleep that night and had a dream in which my mother, who died in 1996 and very occasionally emerges in dreams, never to give me advice. And this is the first time. And I said in the dream, "Mom, ugh, I'm breaking up with him tomorrow. I'm really sad." And she said, "Oh, honey, I know. We were really feeling good about this one, weren't we?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And so it's just time to move on." And I said, "But Mom, I'm getting old." And she said, "Oh, God, you've got 6 more years." And I really did. I woke up and I was like, "Oh, right. What am I so freaked out about? I have a little more time. Like, I don't have to go just marry someone because I'm supposed to. What's going on? What kind of craziness have I absorbed?" But it was a kind of, I had been going through, I think, in a way, you know, that there was the kind of mourning of that idea was what ending that relationship was about, was here I am giving up that, you know, maybe this is my last chance at the kind of traditional way of doing things. And it made me really sad to think that I wouldn't have that. But oh my God, I have been so much happier ever since. Just, you know, once you reach the other side of a kind of mourning, that there's a clarity there and a liberation that you couldn't have anticipated.
You said that you had recently gotten to the point where you thought, "Yeah, I do want to get married." What if you hadn't gotten to that point? You know, if you were still the Kate who's decided, "No, I really like my single life." Can you kind of paint a picture of what your life would be like?
Yeah.
You know, moving on into the future.
It's funny. This is a complicated thing to describe, but I too, like, just as you were describing that, as, you know, a married mother, that you sometimes have the fantasy of being alone. How do I describe this? The fantasy of always being alone is a really appealing one to me. I would, in a way, love if I could always be alone. And so why do I think that I won't? Well, first of all, who's to say I may? I mean, that very well may be what I end up doing. But so why do I think that I won't? Well, that's just because of the way I happen to be oriented psychologically. I really like intimacy, and I really like having someone that I'm sharing things with. But the the difference or the way I think about how that romantic person fits into my life is that that romantic partnership is one of many relationships that are very meaningful to me. It's not the primary relationship. And so in my own fantasy of my own eternally single life, I just see myself doing exactly what I'm doing now, I guess, just more and more years of it, that I'm very excited by my work, just doing more, getting better, becoming a better writer, a better thinker, traveling, continuing to share my life with my close friends who have been with me all along and making new friends. And, I'm very involved with my nieces are young and having just my own family life is very sustaining to me. And so, yeah, I guess I just see a life of eternally being single as being exactly as it is right now.
And that's not lonely?
It's not lonely at all. That's not to say I don't experience loneliness at times. Of course I do. But I think we all experience loneliness, even when we're married. And so that's another facet of this conversation that is important, I think, about what it means to be alone and to be single, is that loneliness is not exclusive to the single. It's mm-hmm. something, loneliness is part of life, just as death is part of life, and misery is part of life, and hardship. It happens to all of us. We all experience very negative things, and there's no panacea. There's no way to just fix any of that. And so, yeah, there are lonely times, and they suck, but they are less sucky as time goes on. I have definitely gotten much better at dealing with those kinds of emptier moments or feelings.
And I guess what you're saying is that loneliness doesn't mean you've made the wrong life choices.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also to keep in mind that this kind of marriage revolution that we are witnessing, in which people are getting married later and less frequently, we're also, currently under, in the midst of this gray divorce revolution, they're calling it, where divorce rates for those 50 and over have doubled over the last 20 years. So we are spending more time alone at every chapter of our life. And that's, again, it's why it's so important to understand what being alone and being single means, and really recognizing that it can be a very positive experience if
right.
you make it that way. Because
right. we really need to stop seeing it as a form of failure.
Exactly. And, and the beginning of my thinking about this whole topic was when I was in my late 20s and, at that marrying age, and realizing I didn't have the urge to marry, feeling very confused by that, and then looking around at, the mothers of friends of mine who were divorced or widowed and having an incredibly difficult time of figuring out how to be alone in the world. No longer, their children were grown up, the husband is gone, they were a wreck. And that terrified me, because I thought I could get married right now at 30, and at 40, my husband could get hit by a car and die. And I will have never spent any time alone taking care of myself. I've always been dependent on another human. And that, how will I become a grown-up who can really take care of myself if I don't do it now? I need to learn this. And so this whole topic began for me as a very personal kind of idiosyncratic quest, just to that for me, that is what it meant to become an adult, was to be able to account for myself, take care of myself, be able to, earn my own way, create a career, see myself through lonely times, see myself through difficult moments, create friendships, create relationships. I wanted to own my own agency and not, and again, our other kind of way of thinking about single people is that they're selfish. They're all in it for themselves. And this wasn't about selfishness. It had a lot of to do with relationships and friendships and family, but it was about, not seeing myself simply as a romantic appendage to somebody else. And that's, so I think another thing I'd like to point out is that women especially, we are raised to be always oriented to another and to always be thinking about other people. And there was some selfishness to my kind of approaching 30 revelation of, yeah, actually, I would like to be selfish for a while. I would like to not be constantly thinking about other people. And so that was revelatory to try that.
Thank you. Thanks so much for talking.
Thanks a lot.